The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hey, all. I'm John Avalon. Before we get to our interview this week with someone focused on solutions, not just problems, I want to talk about something that's firing me up and should get everybody's attention. The U.S. of A is now aligned with Vladimir Putin. Trump has made what is, to me and to many, is an entirely predictable pivot to Vladimir Putin. Not only on Ukraine, but opening up the prospect of a wider alliance. Now, if you believe, as I do, that the defining struggle of our time is democracy versus autocracy, the United States of America is aligning itself with an autocracy. It is aligning itself with an invader. And this is exactly the opposite of the bipartisan national security consensus since the Second World War. It's a rejection of the world that the United States made to strengthen democracies and to learn the lessons of World War I and World War II. It's not just an abandonment of our highest ideals, it's an insult to American tradition. And make no mistake, the American people are not on board with Trump's unilateral decision to change American foreign policy. A decision which itself flies in the face of the long-held belief of even his own Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, who, of course, is going along. Now, there are senators who are standing up and calling out, but those same senators are people who voted to advance the nominations and confirmations of Pete Hegseth and Tulsi Gabbard and RFK Jr. and now Kash Patel as FBI director. The decision to move American foreign policy in this direction for this administration is an abandonment and it's a betrayal. Got nothing to do with the price of eggs, the affordability crisis that made some folks think that Donald Trump stood for something other than what he has and what he is. Someone who's never said a bad word about Vladimir Putin, but who is now, in fact, parroting Russian propaganda about Ukraine. The United States is even refusing to sign on to a declaration describing Russia as the aggressor in the war they started when they invaded Ukraine. Think about that. That's a rejection of fact. That's Orwellian doublespeak. That is not what America stands for or who we are. But it is who this president is. It is what this administration is undertaking. And that's a clear and present danger. Now, what can we do about it? First of all, we need to keep our moral compass right. We need to recognize that this does not represent the views of the vast majority of the American people. It doesn't represent America's values, which are rooted in a belief in freedom and democracy at home and abroad. There'll be all sorts of real politic rationalizations by some folks, but the National Review is pushing back, even though this was entirely predictable. So is the Wall Street Journal editorial page and the New York Post. It's good to see people put country over party, but it can't be a la carte. That's the problem. This matters to all of us. It matters to the world which our kids will inherit and that we are briefly responsible for. It cannot be allowed to be simply accepted. It's a rejection of our highest ideals. It's a rejection of considered national security policy rooted in deep principles about who we are and what we stand for. So now's not the time to put your head in the sand. Now's not the time to throw up your hands. History is written not just by the winners, but by people who strengthen their civic backbone in times of crisis. So look for that North Star. Focus on that North Star. We need to continue building the broadest possible coalition to defend democracy. This is going to be a tough time. People already know that. But let's stay focused as we can on solutions and understanding that underneath this capitulation, this sort of code pink conservatives and pivot to Putin, think about energy policy. Think about the prospects for combating climate change, but how America needs to be independent and not feed these petro oligarchs, among whom is Vladimir Putin. And that brings me to our conversation today. It's a conversation with Rachel Pritzker, who's written about a centrist vision for global energy policy and how leaning into technology might help us find some common ground even among our divisions at home, and even help combat the climate crisis, which has been entirely sidelined by the Trump administration. Let's get after it. Welcome to How to Fix It. I'm John Avalon, author, journalist, recent congressional candidate. This podcast is focused on how we can find solutions to the problems we face, not just focusing endlessly on the problems themselves, how we can build a moderate majority to solve problems in this country again. And there are no greater challenges in the largest scope, perhaps, than dealing with climate change and energy and the intersection between them. As the globe is getting warmer, but as this administration seems to be hostile to some of these concepts. And yet there may be some opportunities to invest in clean energy technologies, to make progress in that innovation attitude that always has been how America solves its problems. And joining us today is Rachel Pritzker. She's the author of a great new essay and a book called The Center Must Hold about a centrist approach to global energy policy, which not surprisingly is focused on not only innovation, but addressing climate change crisis. Rachel, thank you for joining us. And I want to begin here. You describe yourself as an eco-modernist. What is that?
Well, first, John, thank you for having me. And an eco-modernist is someone who believes it's important to balance meeting environmental challenges like climate change with human needs. And those human needs include living prosperous, secure lives, which requires access to reliable, affordable energy. And to do that, eco-modernists believe we need to innovate and apply better technological solutions to address those dual imperatives.
This is the very American idea that we innovate our way out of problems. We don't embrace deprivation.
Yes.
Sometimes an approach associated with Jimmy Carter, God rest his soul.
That's right. And more recently, it's been referred to as the abundance agenda, which is an aligned and related philosophy of, rather than sort of shrinking the human footprint and us using less energy, is to figure out how we actually make more, but do it in a cleaner way.
We can address the climate change while investing in energy and improving people's quality of life. And yet this administration, at the outset, removed America from the Paris Accords. It has taken a very hostile approach to anything resembling climate change initiatives that were passed by the past administration. It has really doubled down on what seems to be a fossil fuel approach to energy. Even though oil and gas production hit a record high under Biden, they don't think it's enough. Where do you think are the opportunities in this landscape to help make progress on this critical issue for us all?
Well, I'm hopeful that there are opportunities. One example is in the confirmation hearing for Christopher Wright to head the Department of Energy. One of the most bipartisan topics seemed to be nuclear energy and how to innovate and unleash the private sector in nuclear energy. I also think another area of really useful potential bipartisan action is in permitting reform. Sort of the idea of unleashing and unblocking all the, basically the sludge we've put in the way over the last few decades to prevent us from building really anything, but in this case, specifically energy infrastructure, things like power plants of all sorts, but also even small scale things like EV charging stations have been held up. So that is another area I have real hope in. And then more broadly, investments in earlier stage technologies that still need some support, I really hope continue to get support, because the idea that the U.S. could compete in the sort of future technologies on a global stage to me seems like an argument that really could be made.
What are some of those other technologies?
Well, things like deep geothermal feels like a really promising one, in part because it can provide, you know, 24/7 power, which is really important. And it's based on the drilling technology that we innovated here at home, which Christopher Wright is quite familiar with, which, you know, is now just simply referred to as fracking. Another is both for energy abundance, the Trumpy term for this is energy dominance, but also for national security purposes. Unblocking the current roadblocks we have put in place that prevent us from mining for critical minerals, which we have a lot of, we just basically aren't able to mine for them, would be another thing that I think could be an area of bipartisanship.
This almost harkens back to something in the Teddy Roosevelt era that used to be called wise use conservation. You know, you would use public lands. Gifford Pinchot was an advocate for it. And it was controversial even then. Some people said absolutely nothing should be done. But let's break down the things you just discussed. Let's start with nuclear power, because this used to be something very polarizing. And early on, there was a member of Greenpeace who left the organization because of their opposition to nuclear power, saying this actually is the cleanest technology for helping us deal with climate change. The Biden administration, I actually interviewed Jennifer Granholm about this, the former energy secretary, actually was the first Democratic administration in a long time to advance permitting reform, to accelerate investment in nuclear. And obviously the AI companies, Microsoft has bought Three Mile Island. That used to be a very dirty word in all senses of the term. This gives you some reason to think that there can be, and indeed the market forces are moving towards something that could be very beneficial to the climate.
Yeah, I have been a long supporter of the research and advocacy necessary for there to be a civil society voice in favor of nuclear power, which until 10 or 15 years ago was not a thing. It was sort of like either just top-down industry or government directing where the research went and advocating for the use of nuclear energy. And all the opposition was coming from civil society. Well, in the era of climate change, many environmentalists, me included, had to really rethink our assumptions about nuclear as a power source. And the more I looked at it, along with a bunch of other environmentalists together, digging into the realities of it, rather than just sort of like our fears that we had inherited from, in part, associating it with weapons, because they have the same word, the more I realized that this is like kind of a miraculous technology. Like if it were to be invented today, it would change the world. People would be so thrilled to be able to make almost infinitely dense amounts of energy out of basically almost nothing. There's very little material inputs. It takes up very little land use, which is a real issue with other sources. And then you do have waste, but it's contained. It's just sitting there. You can monitor it. You can guard it. Whereas many other sources sort of just emit their waste into our shared air. So it is, I think, a technology that has a lot of promise. And because no innovation had happened in the sector in a generation, there were also a lot of interesting new ideas for how to solve different sort of market niches using different designs. And they all started to kind of bubble up out of the private sector 10 or 15 years ago. So a handful of us philanthropists funded a handful of researchers and advocates to ensure there was a path both through the licensing and to do things like access the national labs, because, you know, you can't basically test a reactor in your garage.
It's frowned upon.
Yeah, it's not so cool. So there wasn't a civil society voice advocating for them on the basis of like a benefit to Americans and our prosperity and our air and all, you know, previously had just been industry. And it really shifted the debate.
And some of these are advances, are they're small modular nuclear reactors. There are other innovations that are even more speculative, but notably a lot of the AI investors and industries are actually also investing in nuclear power because of the expected demand, yeah. Putting aside China's most recent claims. Discuss small modular and some of the other new nuclear technology that you think is really hopeful and exciting.
Yeah. So this whole new sector, just sort of broadly referred to as advanced nuclear, are mostly small, although even the small ones can be sold in like packages. You know, you could line up a few of them to add up to more. And some are really small. Some are like micro reactors that can be used like you know, in a far-flung mine somewhere or a military base even. So they're all going after different use cases. So some of them, for example, are really high temperature. And so they could be used to generate heat and power, which is a really important thing for a lot of industrial uses, whether that's chemical processing or water desalination. And many of them are passively safe, which means they sort of automatically cool down if they lose power. Many of them can operate at ambient pressure, so they don't need these giant pressure vessels, which are a big part of the cost of building a reactor. And in part, they're hoping that because they're small, they can be manufactured rather than like artisanally on-site constructed so that you can bring down the cost through just manufacturing a lot of them.
Everything you just laid out, though, really does address people's concerns, whether it's Fukushima or the specter of what Three Mile Island might have been, or the site location of Indian Point, because the energy needs keep growing. So everything you just laid out addresses a lot of those concerns in exciting ways. And that doesn't even address the progress we're making on nuclear fusion, which is still perhaps perennially 20 years out. But nonetheless, actually, we're making some scientific progress, which is incredibly exciting. The other less sexy point you made, but it's really practical and important, and there may genuinely be common ground, is something that Ezra Klein sometimes describes as supply-side progressives, right? Or Joe Manchin worked on this. In fact, it was supposed to be part of the Inflation Reduction Act, which would streamline permitting processes so we can get some of these clean energy initiatives off the ground. And just for folks to think about this at home, if Democrats or liberals are kicking back on the idea of deregulation, one of the reasons that the historic acts that Joe Biden got put in place didn't take effect so that people could see and feel their benefits is because the permitting process is so long that people didn't get a sense that anything was being done.
Yeah.
So dig into that for a bit.
Yeah. The classic example that people are citing of this is, so the Inflation Reduction Act passed now years ago. We have built a total of, I think at this point, 47 EV charging stations. That is nationally. That is not enough. That is too slow. It is not at scale. And that is because of the sludge I was mentioning, the sort of layers upon layers of decades of choke points that we have chosen to put in place, and in part driven by environmental and conservation concerns. And this, I think, gets to a really sort of deep philosophical point, which is environmentalism in the early days was oriented towards stopping things. It was oriented towards also addressing much simpler pollution problems like lead or mercury, where you could like sign some kind of legal, you know, intervention, bring a lawsuit or even a bill to just say, no, we're going to replace this thing or do away with it, and the problem would be solved. So the environmental movement developed legal mechanisms, and essentially their hammer was stopping things. So everything became a nail. Well, then climate change comes along. And they're still trying to use this hammer of stopping things. So now they're just sort of trying to use those same rules to stop fossil energy. But what they haven't done is realize we need a whole different set of tools to actually take out some of those nails to be able to build the stuff we do need. Because we can't just do less and less and less energy. We actually have to replace, which means building. And this is what the abundance agenda is. And it's actually what eco-modernism is, too. It's like, how do we actually reorient? And it's almost a 180 for the environmental movement, which is why we have a whole set of new institutions and new thinkers coming into the space going, hold on, there's like a really different approach. And that is for prosperity, for security, and to address climate change. We need more energy, not less.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
And this is the abundance agenda that's been pushed by Matt Iglesias and Ezra Klein and others. And you mentioned in your essay the Breakthrough Institute as being an organization which is also trying to lead this charge. Talk about that.
So the abundance agenda was a term coined first by Derek Thompson, who's a writer at The Atlantic. And he is now about to release a book with Ezra Klein, which I believe is going to be called The Abundance Agenda, or at least Abundance Something. So the word abundance is having a moment, and there is kind of a loose movement coalescing, which I find fascinating because it is not partisan. There's a range of organizations kind of from across the political spectrum, and many who are just not partisan, who are associating themselves with this movement. And in October, the Breakthrough Institute, along with a bunch of co-host organizations, put together a conference in DC, and like 350 people came together to talk about a full range of things related to basically how we reorient ourselves to building again, to bringing down the costs of things, to figuring out how to scale things, to figuring out how to permit and license and actually make things happen in the physical world. Because for a long time, our economy has focused a lot more on consumption and on making things that are kind of ephemeral, whether it's like software or services. We just haven't been building physical things as much. And so we have that muscle memory that is not as developed as it needs to be.
There are obviously new barriers being thrown up in areas where there could and should be common ground. One is the Elon Musk of it all. And the second is the attempts to derail the Inflation Reduction Act, which you cite as one of the great sort of models for how to approach climate change legislation, because it dealt with some of the regulation issues, because the Green New Deal got a lot of attention, but never got any votes. So what do you make of the fact that the derailing the IRA is such a point of pride for Trump Republicans and Trump coming in the office with an executive order? How does that give you hope that there is room for common ground on these issues?
Yeah, well, first I would just note that the Inflation Reduction Act is not called the Solve Climate Change Act. Mm-hmm. And that is because it's not actually that popular. It had to be called something else, and it had to be passed through reconciliation, which means it's easier to repeal. So going forward, if we're going to have more durable impact on climate change, which we really need to. This is not a short-term, you know, every 4 years we change our mind about how to approach kind of issue. We need to think about how to build a broader coalition. And I think having included permitting either with it or alongside it would have been one way. Another way is what Matt Iglesias refers to as secret Congress, which Ted Nordhaus at the Breakthrough Institute calls quiet climate policy. And that is small, discrete, boring bills on things that have gotten passed with remarkable bipartisan support, like the ADVANCE Act, which was focused on unblocking some of the issues around licensing new advanced reactors. But it's like kind of too boring for people to get worked up about. It's not big enough to unleash bipartisan, you know, toxicity. And so that is one approach. The other is, honestly, I think in this moment, rather than going on pure defense, which I think would be futile, honestly, trying to defend the entire IRA, I think climate advocates should think hard about which pieces are the easiest to defend and, frankly, the most effective. On that, again, Ted Nordhaus and his co-author, Alex Trembath at the Breakthrough Institute, had an interesting piece last week in the Wall Street Journal about how actually the most expensive parts of the Inflation Reduction Act are likely not going to be the most effective parts at bringing down the cost of clean energy. A lot of the money, so a half to three quarters of the money of the IRA bill, goes to advanced technologies, things like solar and wind, and to consumer-facing rebates for electric vehicles, none of which are likely to actually make those technologies cheaper. What could make those technologies cheaper are other parts of the bill, things like the vehicle charging stations, things like transmission infrastructure and storage, which needs more investment in sort of bringing down the cost and innovating the technology, as well as other technologies in the bill, like nuclear, like deep geothermal, that still aren't fully advanced, mature technologies, where there could be cost savings through investing in the technology to bring down the cost. Because ultimately, because climate change is a global problem, our biggest bang for the buck is to make clean energy cheap, not to continually underwrite advanced mature technologies.
Right, which we still do for oil with subsidies.
Yeah, to some degree. Although what people don't know is most of the subsidies are actually on the consumer side and not so much to the companies. That is a fair comparison, but it's highly debatable about the quantity and how they're targeted and whether it's actually an equivalent type of subsidy.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Given that Trump campaigned when he spoke to the oil and gas lobbyists and said, just give me $100 million, you'll save a lot on lobbyists, that he said he'd do nothing on climate change. We just had our hottest year on record. The first thing he does is get out of the Paris Climate Accords. You sound notably not despairing about the prospects for progress in this next administration.
Well, I never thought the Paris Climate Agreement was going to have much impact. My assessment of that type of global agreement is that countries commit to either what they were already going to do or what they are not able to achieve. And it very rarely has any impact on what they're actually going to end up doing. It's a lot of talk. So that's why I don't know. I don't really feel that bad, in part because it was going to constrain a lot of poor countries, which is an issue we haven't touched on yet that I care quite a lot about. And I just think when we're talking about climate change, we have a lot of competing imperatives. Addressing climate change is important, but it is not the only thing. And if you are a poor country trying to make future energy choices, it's not likely to be the most important thing. Especially because you and your population did not create climate change, and poverty is likely to be a much more immediate issue on your mind. And energy basically is the rate-limiting factor to everything we care about. You know, health outcomes, educational outcomes, being able to get a job, being able to, you know, move around, use air conditioning. Basically, all of modern life relies on reliable access to affordable energy. And what we in the West have done, rather than help support and unleash that kind of potential in the developing world, is often kind of restrict the types of projects we'll invest in, or just kind of go and finger wag and lecture and say, you know, you really shouldn't take financing from China. They're terrible. But then not actually follow up with the kind of financing mechanisms that would help replace the deals that countries like China and sometimes Russia are offering countries. So when I saw the administration, and again, this is all fog of war, so who knows, that they may have zeroed out or at least drastically reduced the Development Finance Corporation, I was kind of horrified. So the Development Finance Corporation is not foreign aid. It is one of the tools the U.S. uses to invest in the energy infrastructure of developing countries. And then we get money back. It's not just grant money. It's investment. And it's a tiny drop in the bucket for us to compete with countries like China that are buying influence in the world. And when we clear the field and no longer help support countries, we are giving that leverage and influence away, essentially. So it's reducing or doing away with the Development Finance Corporation is like, as Todd Moss at the Energy for Growth Hub says, it's energy dominance for Russia and China.
Take that in. And that is the larger stakes, right? I mean, you know, we see these sort of petro oligarchs and how oil dependence drives geopolitics in ways that are not for freedom, democracy, or peace. And that's just self-defeating.
And not just oil and gas. I would add that China goes around and builds things that we don't build also, like hydro dams. And Russia especially is going around making dozens and dozens and dozens of deals to build nuclear plants around the world that we are not competing with. And that is a concern, not just for global security because of those 80 to 100 year relationships. It's also because if we are not exporting nuclear technologies and making these bilateral agreements, we no longer really have a say in nuclear safeguards.
Right.
We can no longer set the standards if we've vacated the field. So I am also concerned about that.
As well you should be, as well as everyone should be, because that gets right to the heart of the nightmare scenario that has haunted us all and frankly hemmed in nuclear progress. That's yet another thing for folks to pay attention to. Even if it looks small, the unintended consequences could be huge.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the Elon Musk of it all. You're a Bay Area person. And, you know, there was some talk in Elon Musk's shift to being a Trumpist, putting aside Doge, that he would advocate for, as he has in the past, the importance of taking climate change seriously. This was part of his rhetoric around his investments into Tesla, battery technology as well. This was something he seemed to care deeply, deeply about. Given his proximity to power, are you surprised that none of those gains or conversions seem to be made, or do you... You know, how do you read that? Because what some people thought was a silver lining has notably failed to materialize in the extreme.
Yeah. So just to be clear, I don't know Elon Musk.
Not everyone knows each other in the Bay Area? No.
No, not everyone. So I can only speculate. But what I have heard him say is that he has frustrations born of experience from trying to build things. And he's not alone. So I understand the frustration people have about state capacity, about government being efficient and delivering things. And I also just want to say, like, I live in the city, which famously tried to build a single public toilet in a town square, which was going to take 2 years and $2 million. That is not the way to run a country. So, like, it is that kind of frustration that I think people in the Bay Area have even more than the rest of the country, because we have an incredible layer of sludge here. The choke points, the sort of like every neighbor can weigh in if you want to, you know, change anything about your house, and the, you know, building and permitting process is just virtually impossible. So everyone needs to hire an expediter to get anything approved.
Yep.
It's frustrating. So I really understand the underlying frustrations. On the other hand, I don't think a sledgehammer is the right approach. I don't think you can make it better until you understand it. And this is the thing, when someone gets so frustrated that they just want to pop off and like blow it all up, is that actually our government does a lot of important things. And if you don't know where the important things are, you might break it before you've figured out how it works. So I am very nervous about that.
Well, move fast and break things might not apply to government.
Correct.
It's extraordinary to see how passionate he was in particular about the threat to climate change, the importance of innovating our way out of it. And yet that core conviction seems to be absent so far, given his extraordinary influence in this particular government. What do you think activists and philanthropists should be doing who care deeply about climate change, who want to see progress made on clean energy technology, given the headwinds? And in some cases, I mean, projections that a failure to take action at this stage will put us on an even more dangerous path in terms of the impact of climate change on people's lives. What do you recommend that activists and philanthropists do at this time?
I think this is a really important moment, actually, to stop and think about what we have done in the past that hasn't worked, ways we've approached this problem that may have been counterproductive and actually further polarized the issue. Because I know the knee-jerk response is going to be to kind of go on full defense and resist on everything. And I just don't know that that's in the long run going to build towards the kind of politics eventually where we have a broad enough public support and a broad enough coalition to make enduring progress on these challenges. So I think it's a good moment to look for where the opportunities are that we can build on in this moment and eventually sustain positive momentum. So I think it's worth actually looking at some of the smaller organizations that are less partisan, that have ideas actually for where progress can be made even in this environment. Most of the large environmental NGOs, as far as I've seen, are just sort of doubling down on what hasn't really worked. So some of these smaller, less partisan groups are a couple that I've mentioned, like the Breakthrough Institute, like the Energy for Growth Hub. There are also some pragmatic center and center-right groups that I think are important to look at right now. Groups like ClearPath and Niskanen, R Street, and, you know, basically all the groups who are under this like umbrella of the abundance agenda, which really does span the ideological spectrum. I think just more broadly, like philosophically, rebuilding a climate and energy agenda on the left that takes like the political and technological reality seriously, that needs to start now. That like hard look at what hasn't worked and making a plan for what to do going forward that is different needs to acknowledge that some of the underlying assumptions and ways of intervening were not effective. Like, we shouldn't double down on like defending the status quo and the rigid purity testings that we've applied to the technologies and the people in the space, and instead really think about how we can remain open to building a bigger tent, because it's going to take a bigger tent.
Rachel Prisker, thank you for joining us on How to Fix It.
Thanks for having me, John.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.